In this episode, we unpack why sperm matter, the important role of male fertility, and how it's drastically declining. We break down how sperm are made, what can impact them, and what practical steps you or your partner can do to optimize sperm, improve fertility outcomes, and change the trajectory of your future children's health. This topic is very near and dear to my heart, as you will soon find out. Grab a pen and paper or get ready to add some notes to your phone, and let's get started.
Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about.
Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Let's talk about the men's role in fertility and preparing for pregnancy. Now, Leah, this is your wheelhouse as well. Mm-hmm. This is like an area where you probably know more than many other people in the country in general, even the doctors. And I think that that's because of your own personal story as well. Mm-hmm. Of course, most of the time we gain all of the knowledge that we have in a deep way because we've been through something. Yeah. So do you want to go ahead and start giving an overview with that? And then we'll go ahead and jump into labs, supplements, all of the different things to be thinking about when you are trying to get pregnant and suspect that there's something going on with the man's side of becoming pregnant.
Yeah, absolutely. As you're correct that I do know a lot about this, and it's because of my own journey. My husband had no sperm. We found out about that when we were in naturopathic medical school, and it, you know, took us down like a 5-year journey of trying to figure out why and what's going on. And through that, you know, I learned a lot, not only being a patient going through infertility with male factor, but also from a physician side of how much is lacking in this space and how much more information is needed. And it is shocking to me still that we give such little emphasis to the male side, because they are 50% of the genetic code of our future babies. And so, yes, women are who carry the baby. And so we often focus on them because, you know, she's the one that says, I'm pregnant or not. And so it does feel a lot of the time energetically shifted toward the woman. And then she's obviously the one that becomes pregnant, carries the baby, births the baby. So there is a really big shift where a lot of it is placed on the female side, but becoming pregnant is very much a 50-50 situation. And I think that this is just an important part that we need to highlight, not only in conception, but staying pregnant, because male side impacts miscarriages and loss as well.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that this kind of comes from back in the day, not necessarily giving any time frame of window of when I'm referring to here, but just I think that in the past there used to be, maybe it was more often the woman, and, you know, with PCOS, or is she ovulating, or is there enough estrogen and a thick uterine lining, et cetera, et cetera. But in recent times, as we've been hearing, and most people aren't, this is not new to them, male sperm rates, motility, the health of a man's sperm has been rapidly declining in the last 15 years mm-hmm. to a very, very scary number. And if we're at the current rate.
Yeah. So there's a recent book that just came out called The Countdown, and it yes. was written by the epidemiologist who's done a lot of the studies on sperm and the impacts of environmental toxins on sperm, not only of humans, but of other animals and species. And if the trajectory continues at the same rate that it has, which, yes, you know, I did a video on this on TikTok and it got a lot of interest. It became very viral because there are a lot of opinions on both sides, and that, yes, you can't necessarily take data and extrapolate that and say that this will be what happens. But the projection is that if it continues, there will be almost no fertile men on the planet by 2045.
Oh my gosh. And just for reference, it's 2022.
Yeah.
That is in 13 years. No, 23 years.
And I'm pretty sure that is the date. I'll make sure that you don't quote me on that, but it's actually like projected in that study, peer reviewed study. And it's because they're looking at the projection that has currently happened. And it's so exponentially high. Yeah. 2045 is the year. It's so exponentially high. And if the root cause of that is toxin exposure that we're seeing, whether it's from physical toxins like herbicides, pesticides, you know, endocrine disruptors like BPA, phthalates, all of that, and also potentially EMFs from our cell phones, our Wi-Fi, which are literally around us constantly 24/7, you know, I don't see a huge shift in any of those coming to the point where that's going to greatly shift that projection. So I hope that I'm wrong, and I hope that that doesn't end up being accurate. But even still, you know, even just a small percentage of a decline should be very concerning to people. And it's actually so great, and it's so impactful, and it's so soon that it's coming, that it's just like a silent, it's like the Titanic, you know, and
I know.
We're literally going right to the iceberg, and everyone's like, dee-dee-doo.
Yep, I know.
Let's drink our like champagne, and you're like, what is going on?
And I think that people don't, you know, as naturopathic doctors, we talk about this a lot too, because people will feel like, well, you know, how much can the scent in my, like the fragrance in my shampoo and my shaving cream and toothpaste and like all of these different products, or, you know, you wake up in the morning, you get in your car, you drive full of exhaust in a, you know, synthetic environment, et cetera, et cetera. How much can all these things add up to some sort of an impact that would be significant enough to notice? And it's like, well, here's the thing. Our liver and our bodies, we can process a lot. This is cumulative in our environment. So many of these, you know, VOCs and these persistent organic compounds do not go away. And there's different classes now where they're like literally never go away. They store themselves in fat or in brain tissue or the bones, or, you know, they all have a different affinity. And a lot of these things, even if you live a very healthy lifestyle, you're still going to be impacted by in some way or another. Now, whether you have symptoms is a different story, but we have to just assume that and arm ourselves with living in like this, the most, you know, clean, least toxic place possible in order to maintain regular health now. And especially when you're trying to get pregnant, we tend to believe that this is the time of having very most optimal health for the epigenetic expression in the baby and just setting yourself up for proper parenthood. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And so the important thing for people to remember is when we talk about epigenetics, that's basically how you as a adult who's getting ready to have a baby, how your genes are expressed and how they show up, but your exposures and your health as a woman and as a man also impact the epigenetics of your future babies. And so epigenetics is basically how their genes express in their their ability or their risk for disease, how they show up not only in utero when they're babies, but also when they're born, when they're children, and when they're adults. And there are studies that show that the impacts and the exposures that a woman and a man have before they conceive impact whether their children get heart disease, cancers, all sorts of things. And so this isn't just for the actual conception part. This is like setting up your family for the rest of time. And so this isn't meant to scare you, but it's meant to empower you in that you have a window to really make a huge difference. And when you talk about the different exposures and toxins and could they really impact us, sperm are just like the most fragile things. Why we are designed this way as humans makes no sense. Just something super basic, like the testicles cannot overheat. They cannot even be the same temperature as the body. Why the male body was designed to have them have to hang outside of the body to survive, I don't know. You know, we could have been designed where they could survive higher heat, but they can't. And they're just very, very delicate little blobs of DNA. And DNA are very fragile. And so when we talk about DNA fragmentation, that's basically when a DNA strand or the type of DNA that are the basically the coding for our genetics, when they become broken down or messed up, then that can lead to things like sperm quality issues. They don't swim well. You can have miscarriages because the embryo has chromosomal issues. Like these all come from DNA problems. And so very little amount of exposure to toxins, heat, stressors, inflammation. These all break down DNA, and it's a similar pathway and mechanism that can eventually lead to cancers in people, but it actually impacts us way more in the fertility space. And it doesn't take much to actually impact that quality, especially of the sperm. So I agree with you, what you mentioned about maybe men are playing a bigger role these days than they ever maybe did in the past, because the exposures that they're exposed to are so much more than they ever have been. I also think that in a medicalized society where men were in charge, they never thought to look at themselves as the culprit.
Yes, of course.
But I do agree with you that even if we had, and even looking at sperm tests from the early 1900s, the mid 1900s, the levels of sperm in those men were like astronomically higher than what they are now. So a fertile man today would have been considered completely infertile back then. And they just keep moving the normal range so that it's not so alarming, because if they had kept it at the range that it used to be just a few decades ago, almost all men on the planet would show that they are not fertile, you know, to the levels that they should have been.
Mm-hmm. You know, and you mentioned how sperm are so fragile, and it's mm-hmm. like, okay, that's probably why there's hundreds of millions of them per totally. Know, ejaculate load, because they so many, I mean, and what, however many percent of them are going to die even mm-hmm. just inside of the vaginal canal, much less making it all the way up through the fallopian tubes.
Yeah.
So it's like, they need to be strong enough to do that. And if they are not, a conception will not happen. It just simply will not happen. Mm-hmm. And of course now as well, it's a blessing and a curse, the modern medicalized fertility scene, because it's allowing people to get pregnant who are having true infertility issues. But then sometimes I think it's normalizing the use of those for women, or for families rather, who don't like necessarily need it or whatever. And maybe that's also another reason why we're not talking about this right now. It's like, well, we can get by IUI, IUVF, like whatever it is we need to do, ICSI,
yes,
et cetera. But it's like, well, okay, that's great that we can do that. And at the same time, on a societal, you know, health population perspective, this is very alarming. So why don't you go back and tell us about the life cycle of a sperm, like how are they made, what's going on, and then what about some of the things that a family can do to ask their doctor about testing or looking into to see the health of the man's sperm?
Yeah, no, it's such a great question. So sperm are made in the male's testicles, and they're made based off of two main hormones that the man makes. So one of them comes from the brain. It's called FSH, follicle stimulating hormone. And that's what actually tells the sperm to be made. And then testosterone is the predominant hormone in men. If anyone's listening, you know, a lot of men talk about testosterone. It builds muscle. It helps with libido. High testosterone is what makes a lot of men go bald. But testosterone is needed to make the sperm as well. And so FSH makes the sperm. Another hormone called LH makes testosterone, or triggers the body to make testosterone, and then testosterone plays a role in the sperm. And so with those hormonal influences, they're told, these little immature baby sperm are told to be made, and then they go through a life cycle in the testicles where they kind of get made, they move. I think of it as like little kids going to like an academy where they're learning to be like super sperm, and like they're training to be swimmers, like Olympic swimmers, and they're shipped off to boarding school. And so they start out in these little nurse cells where they're being taken care of as little baby sperm. And then they get moved to the academy where they basically learn how to swim, learn how to spin their little tail so that they can go on this adventure. And then when a man ejaculates, essentially they leave this holding vessel, and then they go through, you know, the vas deferens, and they pass through the prostate, the little tube through the prostate, and then go out of the penis and an ejaculation. The thing is, from the beginning of their little life, when they're told to be made and they're in their little nurse cell before they go to their little academy, their swimming academy, from the time of the beginning of that decision to what the sperm are actually ejaculated is about 2.5 to 3 months. So it's a pretty long process, and anything that a man's exposed to, you know, at the beginning of that time, whatever the nutrient status of the man is, whatever the inflammation, toxicity exposure is, it's like sending a kid to academy in Chernobyl right after like a bomb goes off versus sending a child to, you know, swimming academy in like a really beautiful, lush, you know, jungle. There's going to be very different outcomes of those two children. And so
we're sending a kid to school without lunch or something.
Exactly. Exactly. Are you really going to create an Olympic swimmer by not feeding them, dousing them in toxins and like stress, and then like making them really hot to the point where they almost burn to death? Like, no, like that's not the best, you know, setup for optimal swimmers. And so men can still have an ejaculation, but they have no idea that the quality of the sperm that they're ejaculating are completely destroyed, or they're all fragmented in some way or another. And so just being mindful that if you go, let's say you're, okay, I'm ready to start trying, honey, let's have sex tonight. You need to be mindful that whatever your partner was doing 2 to 3 months before that is what's going to impact the health of those sperm. So a lot of people will kind of be like, oh, I'm ready to start trying. And maybe their partner will like stop drinking alcohol a little bit and maybe eat a few more salads that week. It won't do anything. It literally won't do anything. You need to do the prep 2.5 to 3 months before. So that's the biggest thing to remember. If you are wanting to understand what's going on with your specific sperm, I would recommend doing a semen analysis first. You can do that with a reproductive endocrinologist, or I always recommend people doing it on their own because you don't even have to go to the doctor. My favorite test is givelegacy.com, and you can just order it on your own. They also have the option to do a DNA fragmentation test. So if your semen analysis comes back with poor quality sperm, or if you have been trying for a while and things aren't going well, or if you're just curious, you can actually check the DNA integrity of the sperm. And so sometimes a man's sperm can look somewhat normal on a semen analysis, but their DNA is highly fragmented. And that can lead to a lot of early miscarriages or difficulty getting pregnant and all of these different things. So those are two tests that you can do on your own or with a reproductive endocrinologist. Running your man's hormones, so those hormones I mentioned, the FSH, the LH, the testosterone, estrogen and prolactin, those are like the core hormones that I like to run. Considering toxicity testing, you know, looking and see if you have phthalates, pesticides, plastics, chemicals that could be impacting the sperm. Everyone's exposed to some degree. So the question is more how toxic are you, not if you've been exposed. And then finding sources of inflammation, potentially looking at your gut health, doing a microbiome test, looking and seeing if there's any other sources that could be impacting, again, making your little swimming academy inhospitable to these little baby sperm that are trying to do the best they can.
So much good information, literally gold. So would you say that, say a couple's trying to get pregnant, maybe they're ahead of the game or wanting to see what's going on, or maybe they've been trying and it's not been successful, to start out with semen analysis and DNA fragmentation test. And then if those come back with something that's worth noting or is abnormal, then to look into the hormones? Or do you think you should do all three, semen analysis, DNA fragmentation, and hormones all at the same time?
So it's such a good question. I mean, I love data, so I love testing. I typically would recommend at least that hormone panel and the semen analysis to start with. If you really had to prioritize, I would say semen analysis first, then hormones, and then the DNA fragmentation test.
Oh, okay.
I guess you don't have to run the hormones if there's literally nothing wrong with sperm. If there's a lower count, so think about it like this. If it's a count problem, your body's having a hard time making sperm. So that's where I would look definitely to the hormones, because then you have to ask yourself, is there a problem with our hormones? Are the hormones not telling the body to make sperm? If there's a quality issue, like they don't swim well, so their motility is poor, or their morphology, which is what they look like, if that looks bad, then I would definitely do a DNA fragmentation test. Okay. Because one is you're having a hard time making them. The other is you might be making plenty, but they look really poor quality. Mm-hmm. That's when you're thinking more toxicity, inflammation, what's the integrity of the DNA. And if money is a obstacle, you know, you don't necessarily need to run the DNA fragmentation test. If you have poor quality, assume it's fragmented and work on all of the things. You know, maybe it would make more sense to do testing, looking at toxicity or these like other sources of inflammation to try to find what's breaking that down, the DNA. A DNA fragmentation test would be helpful if you've been trying to conceive. Maybe it hasn't been working, even if your semen test looks pretty normal. She checks out great. and or you've had a few, you know, chemical miscarriages or miscarriage losses, I would definitely run a DNA fragmentation test at that point.
Okay, awesome. And so then now let's pretend that there's this patient who does find a lot of issues that are going on. Is there, you know, what would be kind of the causes of that? And don't you have sort of some resources that people can dive into to learn more about that in those cases, which, you know, hopefully now are not as common. I mean, we know that it is becoming really common, but in the future, I feel like this is going to be an invaluable resource, what you've created.
Yeah, no, I do have two courses on male fertility because I just feel that they're so underserved, even on my journey through IVF for male factor, shocked at how little they care about the quality of the sperm. And to your point earlier that I wanted to mention, a lot of times they don't care about the quality of your sperm if you're going through IVF or IUI, because they're like, well, we just kind of bypass like a low count because we're doing ICSI, which is where they actually take a single sperm and stick it into the egg. So it doesn't matter if your sperm's swimming. It doesn't matter if you have a low count. But to me, I say it does matter, because what that tells me is that that's a symptom of an underlying issue with the DNA. And so you could take a really poor quality sperm sample, go through IVF and ICSI, force the sperm into the egg with a poor quality sperm, and then you're going to get a bunch of poor quality embryos that either don't make it to blastocyst stage, or they don't implant, or the child, you know, if it does make it, might have issues with autism or, you know, anxiety or heart disease or all of these things, because the DNA, you know, epigenetics were all off. And that's something that the conventional IVF space really doesn't care about at all, which is shocking to me. So what do you do if you see that there's issues? I mean, all men could probably benefit from this, but especially if you have low count and quality, if you do a semen analysis and the numbers are very, very low, then you definitely need to get a workup for anatomical and genetic issues. So if you have like less than 5 million, I know that sounds like a lot, but a healthy man should have, back in the day, it was upwards of 50 million or more in an ejaculate. Now the WHO says 15 million or lower is infertility, but really it should be 20 million or higher if you really look at like what is appropriate. They just keep moving that number so that men don't feel like they're bad, I think, because it's like ridiculous. But anything less than 5 million is considered almost like an infertile man.
Wow.
So looking for anatomical issues like varicoceles, blockages, genetic issues like cystic fibrosis mutations, you know, potential chromosomal issues where a man was maybe born with an extra X chromosome or different things like that can impact it. If the count's like pretty good, like a classic one that we see is like 12 to 17 million, but then like the quality is not great, their morphology and motility is not great, looking to more of the lifestyle stuff is really, really powerful. So it starts with your diet. Like everything, diet is the foundation for everything, because that not only gives the nutrients that the kids need, so it feeds the sperm lunch, and it feeds them good lunch, right? Think about an Olympic swimmer. You don't want to feed them crap food. You want to give them really good quality food. And it also is a source of either creating inflammation or reducing inflammation. The types of foods that you choose can either bathe your body in a bunch of inflammatory chemicals and cytokines, which can impact DNA. Or if you choose other foods, you know, good quality meats, fruits and vegetables, antioxidants, it can actually combat exposure to toxins, exposure to all of these things in our environment. So diet not only gives you the nutrients, it also determines whether you are bathed in inflammation or not. We find that alcohol use actually is much more impactful for male fertility than female. So potentially pulling back on that for a man, especially those 3 months or more before you try to conceive.
That's because they're so fragile.
Yes.
And alcohol is literally poison. I mean, we both still enjoy it here and there, whatever, and most people mm-hmm. do in the country and in the world, but we do have to be mindful. It's sort of a silly thing. We mm-hmm. know that it's just poison. And if you're trying to combat, you know, any level of potential added assaults to your body, that's a pretty easy one to remove, because it's not just like in the air you breathe. Mm-hmm. It's something you're consciously putting in. And so that is, and then these next two as well, keep going with these sort of quote unquote bad habits that sometimes people have that can be really, really impactful.
Yeah. So smoking cigarettes 100% is like, you know, you're just literally inhaling toxins that damage DNA. And then marijuana actually as well has been found to impact fertility for men and women. And the effects are found most when you smoke marijuana. The studies are still kind of inconclusive on like actually taking edibles in that regard, but definitely not smoking because it's oxidative damage. The same could be said for like charred meat or really burnt toast. Anything where there's burning of anything is going to have a lot of oxidants that damage DNA. So just think, don't burn stuff and ingest it. That's a good common thing to think about. The other thing is stress. You know, stress is really one of those things that people are like, yeah, like stress. But then no one actually does anything about it. And it is so impactful beyond anything. I mean, stress impacts fertility, especially for women, but men as well. It definitely lowers sperm counts and can be a big deal. And I'm going to throw in their sleep. So men's hormones are built when they sleep. So a man who's not sleeping a lot or not sleeping well is not going to make the proper hormones needed to make the sperm. Sleep is also where you regenerate and heal. And so if there is any exposures during the day to your DNA or whatever, your body takes the time during sleep to heal. And so focusing on, you know, I know a lot of men who even, you know, claim to be healthy, but they sleep 4 or 5 hours so they can get up and like exercise really hard. And they're like, no, I'm like super healthy. And then they skip breakfast, you know, because they're doing intermittent fasting and they just drink coffee with butter. And like, that's their whole day. It's like, I understand how in certain circles that could feel good or different things. But for fertility, again, think about these little children. Like, are you going to make your little child wake up at the butt crack of dawn and go push them really hard, not feed them breakfast and give them a stimulant and say, this is the recipe for an Olympic athlete?
Yeah.
No, like, so think of your sperm like little mini children, because they are and they will become your children. Mm-hmm. So do the things, like if you imagine a child, let them sleep, let them rest. Don't stress them out. Don't give them smoke and feed them alcohol. Like think of your sperm and what you do to your body, you're doing to them. And then the other thing is EMFs. You know, some people roll their eyes at this because they're like, ooh, and they've been like told to think weird thing is about energy, but EMFs is just a real energetic force, the same as x-rays, the same as, you know, the thing that you go through when you go to the airport for them to check if you have metal. Those are all energetic waves, you know, gamma waves, the UV rays that we get from the sun. EMFs are no different. Just because we can't see them does not mean that they are not there and they're not impacting us. I don't think anyone would deny the fact that you could be in the sun and you could get burned, even though you can't see the rays from the UV light.
Right.
We see the burn, you know, and we are seeing the effects of EMF, but it's more on like sperm analysis tests and infertility. We don't see it in any other capacity. So in my course that I have resources on like different meters that you can get to check the EMFs in your house and how to mitigate that. And there's all sorts of stuff there. And then the last thing I'll just say are like extra supplements. Again, you know, making sure that you're little sperm babies have all of the nutrients that they need. And there's different herbs and different components that we know have been proven in the literature and studies to improve outcomes with sperm. And so there's so much that we can do. And if you want more of a detailed list of that, you can definitely check out my Strengthening Your Sperm course, or I have a Understanding Male Fertility, you know, trying to figure out how to test what path to take based on what you have. So both are helpful.
Awesome. Yeah. I think that, well, okay, just to finish up that point, to quickly list some off to get you, your interest sort of piqued, because maybe some people have heard of some of these. Some of the kind of common ones I feel like that maybe people have heard of is like B vitamins, vitamin D, omega-3s, antioxidants, and CoQ10, or mm-hmm. things like zinc and selenium. But then there's also L-carnitine, and then there's some herbs like Tribulus terrestris, which is goat head weed, which I have a particular problem with on my property, but it is a beautiful fertility herb for men, or ashwagandha. There's some in Shilajit. So mm-hmm. the fulvic acids, you know, because what do all of these things do? They either affect the hormones, modulate the hormones, or they're giving nutrients. Mm-hmm. Like that is the key. These little sperm are, you have to think about giving them a constant supply of jam-packed nutrients for their little jetpack as they're making their exit, but all, and protecting them via antioxidants from all of these exposures. It's like they are 50% of your future baby's like body plan, their whole plan for their whole life. And they are fragile, but we can do things. And same thing with the EMFs, you know, people will be like, well, what am I going to do? It's just all around me. Like there's nothing I can do. Even little things like turning off your Wi-Fi at night, your cell phone on airplane mode when you're not using it, or off and in another room away from you when you're sleeping, things like that. You know, obviously a lot of jobs these days are on the computer or on the phone. And so we need to use those. So let's maximize the times when we're not using them to be get really, really far away from it.
Yeah.
Into nature and grounding your feet into the earth, the wet earth. You know, little things like that add up, especially with things like sperm, because they're so fragile. They're fragile in the opposite direction as well. They respond quickly to healthy habits.
Yes, they do. And it's amazing to see the studies. Honestly, sperm is so easy to test. You know, this is why it's shocking to me that we don't talk about this more, because it's so easy to show even something so simple, like getting processed meats out of your diet, like will like reverse, you know, poor sperm quality. And you're like, really, that's it? Like, that's all you did. And so yeah, exactly to your point. And the thing that I wanted to say about EMFs is it's very much dependent on the distance to the device. And so I don't think a lot of people realize that, but like if you get the EMF meter, you can test very easily like how far away you need to sit from your phone. Like if you have to have it in the same room, don't put it in your pocket, you know, have it 2 or 3 feet away or whatever it needs to be. And some people can hardwire their internet, so it's not Wi-Fi, you know, but it can be hardwired to the house like we used to have. And that can absolutely take away all EMFs. Again, I show all of this in that course. I actually show us with a meter going around our house and showing what's hot and how we like mitigated it. And so that's another like really easy thing that you can just get set up. And I love what you said about the grounding and earthing, and that is so impactful as well for every person, no matter what, you know, nature's so healing, but this is so important.
I think that kind of component too, sometimes adding in the earth elements can help anchor people to the idea to remember that we are animals and that we are of this earth. And if we work with Mother Nature, many things in our life will improve. And it's just, that is how we've been adapted, evolved, whatever word you want to use, it's true. And the further we get away from this, the sicker and sicker we will become. And we've seen that in these really hyper technology kind of modern times. So let's talk about too the kind of energetics and the emotional support before pregnancy in terms of the father's role here. And what do you find being important there?
Yeah, I feel like we could do a whole episode on this, but I just want to speak to it briefly. And that, you know, we've talked a lot about the physical body, preparing the physical body for optimizing sperm quality and all of that. But I think it's important for men also to understand the reality of how the mental emotional space is going to shift once a pregnancy happens, especially if this is a first time father, or first time parent couple. And in that, you know, the role of the man in many ways is to hold a masculine container for the feminine, which is the pregnant woman who's growing life, which is very much feminine essence in nature. And sometimes for men that can feel isolating, and they can feel kind of not important, not in the center, left out. You know, pregnancy, once a woman becomes pregnant, often their sex life shifts. Some women are blessed with a high libido and some women are not. And so I think for just a man, I think a lot of them are really blindsided either once pregnancy happens or once baby comes, because they just thought it was going to be exactly as it always was. And there was no preparation or just preparing. And I think it's actually more of a trauma response, almost like a shock, because they're like, what's happening? And so I think with this preparation and the preconception period of the physical, also, you don't have to have mastered it until you go through it. It's really hard to understand it, but just be aware that it's coming and potentially start to prepare yourself energetically and emotionally for that shift and the role that is going to be needed for you to play to have this, like, you know, cohesive unit moving forward. And like I said, we can have a whole episode probably about this, but did you have anything you want to add to that?
Yeah. And I would love to speak more to this in the future, because my husband and I talk about it all the time. I think that there's, you're right, like you said, a blindsiding sort of the way that this is going to impact and change your life. And as you and I both know, there's that common tenet of like, oh, well, you just wait, mm-hmm. sort of on the negative side of parenthood and how it's so hard. And of course it is hard, but it's also the coolest, best thing. And biologically, the purpose of life is to mm-hmm. reproduce. And there's so much amazing blessing and opportunity to experience life in like a deeper, more rich way throughout this entire process. If we can be really present for the fact that it's changing and transitioning. Mm-hmm. And I think culture really does support this idea more in the idea of like the death of the maiden as mm-hmm. she becomes the mother through the birthing process. I mean, I would say it starts in pregnancy as well. Dads are kind of left out of this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And it's happening to them too. Obviously it's physically not happening to them as much, but there is importance to be recognized there in how they're going to show up for their family. And you, like you said, it's holding the container. I think so many dads, when the baby comes, they thought that they were going to be maybe more involved in taking care of the actual baby, when in reality they're taking care of the mom so she can take care of the baby, because mm-hmm. the baby doesn't really want to be with the dad. I mean, not that they don't want to be there, but they just, all their needs are met with mom. Mm-hmm. And they know her smell and her heartbeat and her voice. I mean, it's just, that's her, it's almost like they're still inside mm-hmm. for so many months. That's that whole fourth trimester idea. And well, it's part of it at least. And I just, I think it can be really helpful for couples to consider this transition and to place some importance as well on the father and, you know, in little things, talking about parenting, how do we want to do it? How is our communication going to change? Mm-hmm. What is our sex life expectation, and how can we talk about that kind of a thing and change that? I'm really passionate about this topic because I think that it can be an opportunity to bring people closer together and be like, wow, this person, my partner is my rock mm-hmm. on both sides. The man, think about that with the woman or partner, whoever it is, you know. It's just sometimes not. It's a missed opportunity because we're not being really present and connected and recognizing of this experience and having reverence for it as a mm-hmm. transition and as a good thing. And yeah, of course, there's going to be lots of habits and ways that your life is going to change. And that might be kind of tricky, or it might be sort of sad or whatever, because you're used to, you know, certain habits, like you got to go golfing or watch these mm-hmm. shows or go out with the girls or do whatever. And some of those things are changing, but it's like, yeah, but for what? Oh, for the experience of raising a child together. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So anyway, yeah, we'll talk about that again for sure, because it is not talked about enough. And I think there's a lot of suffering that doesn't need to take place if we were to help shift people's perspective to being like, this is an opportunity. You need mm-hmm. to be present to this chapter, shifting and changing and closing and opening to a new chapter.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think it's so important. And I'm glad that we brought that aspect and element in, because there's so much more to becoming pregnant and bringing a child into the world than just the physical. So it's so important. But yeah, I think the thing I want to leave us with on this episode, for as far as men go, is one, they're important. Two, to bring them into this conversation and to not wait. The biggest thing, the thing that breaks my heart the most, is when people don't really look into anything. They don't really test their fertility. They don't really see what's going on. And they just kind of start trying, which is perfect and great if you're lucky in the sense that you're perfectly good to go in the fertility space. But what often happens is a couple starts trying. If they have an issue, they'll try for 12 months as their doctor tells them to, until they're considered infertile. And then at that point, they're like, oh my gosh, you're infertile, go do IVF. And along that whole path, again, the man was never looked at. And if you do go through IVF and you're blessed enough to actually conceive and have a baby, the man still wasn't addressed in that sperm, and 50% of the DNA of your future child was still not addressed. Why, when we could so easily not only shift potentially outcomes in an infertility space where you wouldn't have infertility, you wouldn't have to go through IVF potentially, but you would also improve the quality of your future children, whether you become pregnant naturally or through assisted reproduction. So there's no world where like checking the man is a bad thing.
And it's easy. As what's the cost, would you say? Is it on the cheaper end or more expensive?
I think if you go with a reproductive endocrinologist, typically a sperm test is anywhere between $100 and $150. The thing is, the insurance model won't pay for a sperm test until you are infertile. So this is why
that is heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking. And so this is why a lot of couples don't check their sperm until they've been trying for a year, because they won't even look at you in the infertility world until you've been trying for a year. But then once you've been trying for a year, they just shuttle you to IVF. And so this is what's the breakdown with our system. And so if you are able to potentially pay out of pocket, you can do a semen analysis on your own. Or if you go with Give Legacy, I think it's similar. It's similar in that price, maybe a little bit more.
And two, if cost is a thing that or you just don't want to test for whatever reason, then the resources that we're trying to give you will equip you with the ability to sort of do all of the things, quote unquote,
yes,
so that you have the best chance anyways.
Yes, exactly.
And so that you are in that best space anyways. And I mean, we sort of think that people should be doing that anyways.
Right.
But of course, if there is a problem, then we can get testing and we can figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Yeah. Okay, so awesome. I hope that that's helpful for you guys, and that this is
thank you for your wisdom.
Inspirational episode. Yeah, of course. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast.
In order for other women to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content.
We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.